Well, good to see you all again. If you weren't here for Ops, my name's Johnny, and I'm the campus pastor here. We are going to dive right into our teaching. If you've been with us for this last month or so, we have been working through a series that we're calling Bullseye, for quite simply, aiming for Christ. We are talking about what does it look like for us to, as we are in our year of discipleship, our year of disciple making, what does it look like for us to really lean into what it means to be a disciple? So along with this series graphic, we also have this other image here that we've been working through for these weeks, and we'll continue to do so up right until December, right until Advent starts. You'll see that there are several different little two-word phrases in there. We have been slowly working through every single one of these. We've been doing this now. This is the fifth week that we'll be diving into this. But you'll notice at the center of this bullseye is Christ. And we'll say this every week because this is incredibly important, that we are aiming for Jesus, we're aiming for Christ. We could do all of those other things without Jesus, but that just turns into moralism. It just turns into being a good person. And so to really lean into what it means to be a disciple of Jesus, we have to ask ourselves, well, how do we do those things but with greater intentionality? How do we do those things yet looking through the lens of Christ? Because he's not like one of the teaching weeks, he's all of the teaching weeks. We lean into him and we discover what it means through him to be all of these different things that we have been talking about. You've also heard us say that this bullseye also lines up perfectly with our mission statement. Our mission statement at Willowdale Chapel is that we love God, we love each other, and that we love the world that Jesus, through his people, through his disciples, is working to restore. So those first 2 weeks, we talked about what it means to be biblically formed biblically formed and prayerfully submitted. Those really focus on our upward relationship with God. And these past 2 weeks, and today, we've been leaning into what does it mean? What do our relationships with one another? What do our horizontal relationships? How does our discipleship impact and infect those things? And so today we lean into the idea of what it means for us to be sacrificially giving with Jesus at the center. Now, at the root of this word sacrificially is the word sacrifice, right? We all know what it means to sacrifice things in our lives. The simple definition of sacrifice is that you give up something valuable now in order to gain something more valuable in the future. You give up something valuable now in order to gain something more valuable in the future. So some of you, as parents, you know what it's like. You might say, I sacrifice so much for my kids, right? Or maybe your parents, you know, they sacrificed things for you, whether it was time or money or career or all of those different things. Some of us, we sacrifice things at home in order to get ahead in our careers. Isn't it weird how it almost always happens in that direction? That we always sacrifice things at home in order to get in our careers as opposed to sacrificing things in our careers in order to get ahead at home. But some of you have done that as well, right? You sacrifice certain professional things in your life in order for the life of your kids. Because we know what it means to sacrifice. We know what it means to give up something valuable now for something more valuable in the future. You know, if you're an athlete, you may have given up certain foods, or maybe you sacrificed sleeping or other things because you have an exercise program, an exercise regimen that you need to stay on. Some of you are doing that now. You sacrifice, you know, your favorite burrito or your favorite whatever because you know that the calorie count on that is too high. So you are sacrificing that thing. If you're in the band, you know, during marching season, you are sacrificing time. We were just literally talking about this in the pre-service meeting about how Avongrove Band was in a competition. It was what, 2.5 hours away or 2 hours away or something like that. And some of the parents sacrificed and they drove down to be a part of what was going on down there for a 10-minute presentation that they've seen over and over again. But they performed it twice because they made it to the finals. The same thing, 10 minutes, but it's a sacrifice, right? Not only do the band members sacrifice and marching and camp and all those things, but the parents also sacrifice. And so I don't think I need to convince you. I think you all understand what a sacrifice is, right? We make those in our lives every day. Now, something interesting that when I start to think about sacrifices or the sacrifices that I have made, it all too often comes back to the fact that I realize that they're sacrifices. So it almost sounds very selfless, right? I have made these sacrifices in my life. But if you get down to the root of them, a lot of them are actually pretty selfish because it's the sacrifice that we've made. And even if it's for our kids or it might be for our spouse, in the long run, if our kids excel, it makes us feel really good about ourselves, don't we? And it makes other people look back and say, what a great parent you were. Well, it was the sacrifices that I made, right? A lot of them can be very selfish. A lot of them can be turned around and it can really be all about how we can get ahead in these sacrifices that we make. And so as I was thinking about the sermon this week, as I was praying through this, I just thought, at what point in our lives, I mean, and maybe I'll do this when I get older, and I know I've done it in certain times, but I don't have a great memory of what the outcome of it was. At what point in our lives do we look back and say, was it worth it? Like, those sacrifices that I made, was it worth it? Like, did they actually have the desired outcomes that I thought that they would have? I gave up this valuable thing because I thought something more valuable would come down the road in the future. Well, did it work? Did it actually happen? You know, I think a great question to ask, and it'll tie in with what we're going to talk about this morning, is did the sacrifices that we made, that we have made and will make, did it bear the fruit that we would hope that would have? Did we get out of it what we think we should have? Did we get out of it what we put in? Or maybe if we're honest, a little bit more. We would have liked to get a little bit more out of the sacrifices that we have made. Now, as we're leaning into this series, as you can see still, Christ is at the center, right? So as what we've been doing is we have been reading from the Gospels specifically, either things that Jesus said, things that Jesus taught on, or things that Jesus actually did, some interactions he had with people. And so it's similar. We're going to continue to do that today. We're going to talk about what it looks like for us to be sacrificially giving, to make those sacrifices, but with Christ at the center. And how does that change the way we look at those? So I want to invite you, if you would please stand as we read from the Gospel of John, chapter 15. I'm going to start in verse 9 and read through to 17, and then we'll go back and we'll talk a little bit about what these mean for us. Here's what Jesus says in the Gospel of John, chapter 15, starting in verse 9. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything that I have learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. And so, whatever you ask, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command: love each other. This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated. And so just to put us into a little bit of context here, you heard Drea actually make some comments on this chapter in her call to worship. John 15 is kind of one of those famous chapters. And just to let us know where it fits in the overall push of the gospel, John 13 is where Jesus washes his disciples' feet and celebrates the Last Supper with them. And so very soon, Judas is going to come along. He actually has already left to go get the Roman centurions, the Roman soldiers who are going to come and take Jesus away. So essentially, this is kind of one of Jesus's, this is Jesus's last push. These are the last things that he spoke to his disciples, this long little discourse here, before he was arrested, before he was killed on the cross. And so John 15, before we get to the verses that we read, has all this information about the vine and the branches. And it talks about how Jesus is the vine and we are the branches. And if you abide in him and if you bear fruit, that's how you will know that you are my disciples. That's how the world will know that you are my disciples. And so all that comes right up to the verses that we read this morning. And something kind of cool about this passage is that the whole chapter of John 15 actually ties in very nicely with our mission statement and ties in very nicely with our aim of a disciple bullseye graphic. You'll see here that actually the first 11 verses, John 15, 1 through 11, actually focus a lot on God. It focuses on our relationship with God. It focuses on the branches, the intertwined, intermingled branches. That's us, on their relationship to the vine, on their relationship to Jesus. And there's this big focus there. Now, the ending verses 18 through 25, focus a lot on the branches' relationship with the world. How do the branches interact and relate to the world around them? Now, as you can probably put together here, the middle verses that we just read, specifically 12 through 17, focus very specifically on the branches' relationship with each other, on us intermingling, intertwining branches. And today we're going to lean into what this means and looks like for us to be sacrificially giving. Now, as I often like to do, we're going to go back and start in verse 9. We're going to unpack it. We're going to walk through verse by verse. And very specifically, one of the things that, because you guys are smart, you'll notice this, verses 1 through 11 focus on God, but we're going to start back at verse 9, as we already have. Now, here's why this is important. Verses 9 through 11, while they don't fit into the proper category this morning, usually things like that don't fit into proper categories with God. You see, it's not like, here's our relationship with God, hard stop, now here's our relationship with each other. You see, these things overlap. They go together. Our relationship with God informs our relationships with one another. It informs how we act, how we interact with one another. And so there's this beautiful overlap because we are actually not able to understand what it means for us to be sacrificially giving with one another if we do not understand some important things about our own vertical relationships with God. Do you understand that? Here's what he says in verse 9. We'll read through this here. He says, as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. Now we'll pause right there. Jesus says, as my Father has loved me, so I have loved you. If you have read any of the Gospels, Jesus quite frequently talks about his relationship with God and how intimate and how important it was, how huge and how deep the relationship between Jesus and the Father is. Jesus does the Father's will, and he experiences this love from God, and he knows this love from God. And so he says, as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. This huge, great, deep love that I, the Son, have experienced from the Father, I also give this love to you. And then he says, now remain in my love. Now, this word remain, it's the word meno in Greek, could also be translated in other ways. Some of you are sitting here asking yourselves, why is he not saying abide? Because that sounded very angry to say the word abide in, but that's the other word that gets translated that way. It gets translated as abide. Now, you abide in my love. Another way you could unpack this word is that you could almost say, like, Jesus says, hey, the Father's loved me, so I've loved you. Now come and make yourself at home in my love. When someone comes to your house and you say, hey, make yourself at home, there's something, or if you're told make yourself at home, there's something relaxing about that, right? There's something where you know, like, oh, I can't put my feet on the couch or up on the ottoman, or, you know, like, oh, it's, yeah, I feel comfortable here. And essentially, you could say, you know, like, when it comes to Jesus's love for us, we have refrigerator rights, right? We can go in, we're allowed to remain, we're able to make ourselves at home in Jesus's love. Now, for some of us, though, we would like to stay there, right? We would just like to abide. We say, I'm just abiding with the Father. I'm just abiding with Jesus. I just need to sit and relax and take a load off. And yes, you have to start there. But the fact of the matter is that when it comes to being a Christian or being sacrificially giving, we cannot remain there. You cannot just say, okay, I'm going to abide, and just, Well, no, there's something more, because I don't know about you, but whenever I say to someone, make yourself at home, and whenever I say, you know, what's mine is yours, what's yours is mine, that's also the same person that when I need help, I'm going to call on them. That's also the same person that when I welcome them in, I say, hey, we need some help in the kitchen. Can you go help Jenna, or can you help me, or I need you help carrying this, or we need something moved. Those are the people that I go to, the people that I say, make yourself at home. And so we look at this next verse. In verse 10, what it says is, if you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. Now, the wording on this gets a little tricky. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love. What the Greek here, it's the same word remain, but it almost means like a bit more intimate, that you will intimately remain in my love. And what this means is that as we start out abiding in the love of Christ, as we relax, as we make ourselves at home in who Jesus is and what he has for us, what this does is that, well, it makes us want to keep his commands. This is not one of those things where if you keep my commands, then you will remain in my love. Because a lot of us, whether we just grew up knowing this or we've been burned by the church with things like this, it says, if you really want to be a good person, then you'll keep Jesus' commands and then he'll love you. If you need to earn that love, but what does it start out with? It starts out with what? With us resting, abiding in the love of Christ. Then Jesus says, if you keep my commands, if you want to keep my commands, after you experience my love, this will flow out of you. You will remain in my love just as I have kept my Father's commands and I remain in his love. You see, it's not just about us stopping and abiding. Once we experience that and know that, we're compelled to go forward. Because of this love we have experienced, we really should want the world, we would want other people, our family members, our friends, our neighbors, to know this love. And so we want to then keep his commands. It pushes us forward. Now, this is something that's so interesting, and this next verse is really important, because a lot of times when we think about someone giving us commands or rules, and don't get me wrong, these words, these verbs, they are imperatives in the Greek. These are commands. Remain in my love. Keep my commands. And a lot of times when we think about that, it thinks we just automatically think like, oh, like thumb down, like just oppression, right? Someone's making me, they're forcing me to keep these commands. But why has Jesus done this? Look at this last verse, look at verse 11. He says, I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be made complete. In other words, as we abide in the love of Christ, as we keep his commands, it's joyful. It's good. It's a good thing that that Jesus's joy may be in us, that his joy may be our joy, that we would experience such a great joy and that our joy would be complete. That kind of changes how we often think about commands that are given to us, right? About rules, about things that are given to us. It says, you know what? I want you to remain in this love, the same love the Father has for me, I give to you. And as you remain in my love, keep my commands, you will intimately be welcomed into my home. But keep those commands, and I give you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be made complete. So step one, before we even get to any of the sacrificially giving stuff, is we have to abide. We have to stop. We have to realize the love that the Father has for the Son is also given to each one of us individually, but also us as a community, as a church. And we start there. And then we move on. Let's look at verse 12. Here's what 12 says, and actually also 12 and 13. He says, my command, he says we're going to keep his commands, right? Here's the command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. Jesus says the command is to love each other as I have loved you. Now, as we just said, Jesus is about to be killed. He's about to go to the cross, but we also know that he's about to rise again from the dead. And so what happens here is we have Jesus saying, love each other as I have loved you. Well, how did Jesus love them? He gave up everything. He literally sacrificed his life for them. And so Jesus has remained in the Father's love. He knows his mission. He knows what he has to do. And so he says, here's the sacrifice. Here's what you have to do, that you should love one another as I have loved you. And then he says, greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. The root of sacrifice is love. That's the root of any sacrifice. For some of us, the root of sacrifice is just we feel guilty. For some of us, the root of sacrifice is shame. For some of us, the root of sacrifice is just so we can alleviate these feelings that we have, this pain. But what we see here is that the root of sacrifice is love. Love each other as I have loved you. I gave my life up for you. You really want to know what sacrifice is? Put your life on the line for your friends. Because that is exactly what I'm going to do. And just as Jesus does so often, time and time again, he models for us, he shows us what to do, but then what does he do? He invites us into that same action. He says, you have been so loved, I want you to love, I'm going to lay down my life for you. This is the example I give you, to lay down your life for one's friends. That's one's friends. That is the greatest model of love. That is the greatest model of sacrifice that you could ever give. And so as we think, we're going to look at the rest of the verses here in a second, but as we think about what it means to be sacrificially giving, if we do not start at the root of abiding in the love of Christ, if we do not start at the idea of keeping his commands because we are loved, that we are to love one another in the same way that Jesus has loved us, that we are to lay down our lives for one another, we miss the whole point. Sacrifices are important. Sacrifices are good, but the reason that we do them is also incredibly important, because the root command is to abide. Then we keep the commands. Then we love. It's out of the overflow of our hearts that we do these things. Now let's look at how this chapter ends up here. Look at verse 14. It says, you are my friends if you do what I command you. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. He says, you are my friends if you do what I command. There's something about this as we lean into the Father's love that our relationship with him goes a little bit more deeply and it becomes a bit more intimate. because no longer are we servants of Christ, that we are actually his friends. In other words, what Jesus is saying here is, again, as you abide in my love, as you keep my commands, as you, you know, flow through all that stuff, that you are now called my friends, that you are now on mission with me, that we are on mission together. In other words, my desires and my outcomes, that Jesus, the desires and outcomes that Jesus wants and that he has, those are the same desires and outcomes that he wants his disciples to have as they remain in his love. Something incredible about that is just, I mean, and you know, it says, I no longer call you servants. Don't get me wrong here. We are still serving Jesus as we sacrificially give for one another, as we sacrificially give to him. But it's not the kind of servant where like it's just a slave who doesn't know what's going on. A slave or a servant in those times, they would just be told, hey, do this and you do it. There's not necessarily a reason behind it. But what happens here is Jesus invites us in into a completely different relationship. I love, he says, instead, I've called you friends, for everything that I have learned from my Father, I have made known to you. In other words, he's let them in on what his mission is. He's let them in on the family business. He's let them in and he says, hey, you know these things. This is the same love the Father has given me. I give it to you. So now I no longer call you servants, but I call you friends because you are with me. What I want, you want. We are on mission together. You're the person I'm going to call when I need something carried. You're the person that I'm going to call when a friend needs help. So he says it changes the relationship up. Yes, we're still serving Jesus, but it's not the type of serving where it's just thumb down commands. You, I have to do what you tell me, but it's this joy, right? That our joy may be complete that we receive as we sacrificially give, as we lean into relationship with one another. Now, verse 16 is huge. Verse 16 is really important, and we're going to go back to our own sacrifices here. It says, you did not choose me, this is Jesus, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. So Jesus says, you have been chosen. You have been appointed for a very specific reason. He says, you have been chosen to go and bear fruit. Now, let's pause right here. Remember, I asked the question, have you ever stopped and reflected upon the sacrifices that you have made in your lives? You know, are they worth it? Did I get the outcome that I would have wanted? Are they really bearing the fruit that I would have liked to see happen? Well, here's what happens with this. Jesus says that we're called to bear this fruit, right? That there should be an outcome for the sacrifices that we have made. But he says something very specific about what that fruit is supposed to be. He says it's supposed to be fruit that will what? Last. Okay, now here's this is nerdy Greek stuff, but bear with me, okay? This word will last. It's one word. It's the word meno in Greek. It is the exact same word as the word abide. It is the exact same word as the word remain. And so whenever we read this word about how we're supposed to abide, how we're supposed to remain in the love of God, this is the same word that Jesus is saying here, that we're supposed to bear fruit, but we're supposed to bear this fruit. Actually, if you read the ESV, the English Standard, it says fruit that will abide, fruit that will remain, fruit that will last. In other words, there's something eternal about this fruit that we're supposed to be producing. And so as I was reflecting on this for my own life this week, I was thinking, are my sacrifices that I have made, are those bearing fruit that will last? Or are those bearing fruit that makes me happy for this moment in time right now? Are those sacrifices bearing fruit that will last? Or are those sacrifices bearing things that will just make my kids happy? Or sacrifices that will just get our family ahead for a little bit right now? But are these sacrifices actually something that's eternal? Is that what I'm leaning into? Because Jesus says he has chosen us, he has appointed us to bear fruit. And our sacrifices, I think they do bear fruit, even though they might not be the things that we want. But the question is, are they bearing fruit that's eternal? Are they bearing fruit that will last? Now, something really also a little bit nerdy about this word, this word will last, this word remain, this word will abide. You heard me say earlier that abide in my love was an imperative, right? It was a command to abide in my love. This time it's not an imperative, it's a subjunctive. Now, what that means is that the reality of this coming true, the reality of bearing fruit that will last, is actually contingent upon future developments. What that means is that the reality of bearing fruit that will last has everything to do, not everything, I shouldn't say everything, it has a lot to do with us creating and making ongoing, continuing sacrifices, with us continuing to abide in the love of Christ, with us continuing to keep his commands, to realize that we are his friends, for loving one another as he has loved us, for laying down our lives for one another. If we want to bear fruit that will last, it means that Jesus is just putting the point home here. And John is too, the way he writes this. He says, we still play a pretty big part in that. That it is Jesus who saves. But Paul says this in the New Testament that, you know, someone's planting and someone's watering. He's inviting us into this. He says, if you're going to bear fruit that will last, the future development of that is contingent upon some other actions. In other words, are we going to actually consider ourselves his friends? Are we going to actually consider ourselves on mission with him? Are we going to do the things that we need to do to sacrifice, to give up some of our things for the good of others? But not just so we look like good people, right? And not just so we can get ahead. But we give up, why? So that we can bear fruit that will last, fruit that will remain, fruit that will abide, fruit that is eternal. I don't know about you, but this week, I just walked around thinking like, am I doing something that's going to last or am I doing something that's just going to fade away? Because I think the words of Christ here are incredibly convicting and compelling. And we'll look at the last little verse here, verse 17. This is my command. Love each other. He bookends it. Verse 12, verse 17. This is my command. Love each other. And we didn't even get into this, but for what it's worth, how can you command someone to love somebody? That seems like the opposite of love, doesn't it? Well, the problem there is that we kind of have this little foofy understanding of like Hollywood love, where we think if we don't feel something that we shouldn't have to do it. But again, the Greek helps us out here. This word love, they have several different words for love. This is the word agape. And agape love is love that is sacrificial. Agape love sometimes is the love that you have to make a decision to do. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son. That's the agape love of Christ. And so we're called into this agape love. It's not just like, I don't feel like being sacrificial. I don't feel like loving one another. It doesn't matter. You're on mission with Christ. You abide in his love. You're keeping his commands. And so when Jesus says, this is my command, love one another, we lean into it in a completely different way than just, do I feel like it? We'll see. Now, that's heavy, right? That's big. But what does this mean for us? Like a lot of this can seem very theological. It can seem very theoretical. We can say like, well, that's very nice. I've heard those words before. But what does this actually mean for us individually, for us to be sacrificially giving? Now, if you've been around church for a long time, you probably have heard there's three categories that usually get thrown out whenever it comes to being sacrificially giving and for us making sacrifices. They all start with T, right? Time, treasure, or time, talent, and treasure. What does it look like for us as disciples of Christ who abide in his love to be sacrificially giving with our time, with our talent, and treasure? Now, something else this week that has also hit me right between the eyes has just been this idea. It came from an idea of something I was reading this week of how do we think about this as we compare and contrast spending versus investing? I know those are very financial terms, but how do we think about this in spending versus investing? I think this will make sense as we talk about each one of these. First, time. How do you... I use this word all the time. How did you spend your time today? Right? You could just think about that. Well, I spent my time. I woke up. I made breakfast. But really, as we're thinking about what it means to be disciples of Christ, what does it mean for us to think about how do we actually invest our time? And as we think about investing our time, we're supposed to bear what? Fruit that will last. And so the question is time being taken up by other things that are bearing fruit that won't last? That are bearing fruit that's not eternal? Or is our time taken up with things that are, you know, I was even thinking about, man, like dinner. Like, are we able to, I know my family we rarely did this just because we had three boys, we were all going different directions, but it was like the time that's spent around the dinner table and the conversations that are able to have happen around that time that's given, it's different. Are you even able to make time for your neighbors? Or are we just all so busy? Are we all just running in different directions because we feel like we have to keep up with other people? We have to keep up with the world. And I know the phrase you're thinking, well, that's just the way it is, right? Well, that's just the way it is if we don't want to bear fruit that lasts. But the question is, we have to ask ourselves, are we really bearing fruit? Are we producing fruit that will last? Are we giving our children? Are we giving our friends? Are we giving our neighbors? Are we giving each other the opportunity to experience Jesus because of the way that we invest our time? So I just ask yourselves this week, just look at your schedule. Look at your time. Look at how you're spending it and where you're spending it. And just ask yourselves, where this week am I just spending time, or where am I investing time? And for some of you, you might have to think, okay, well, I'm definitely spending time there. Well, what would it look like for you to actually start investing your time while you're there at work, right? What are the eternal fruits that are being produced, that are at least being introduced and directed as you're wherever you are with your time? Now think about your talents, right? When you think about time or when you think about sacrificially giving with your talent, every single one of us, one of the things we believe here about people is that God has given each one of us different gifts and different talents. The question is, how are you investing those talents? For some of you, that means that you have to rethink how you do your work outside of this world, outside of church land, at your job. You can be investing your time at a public school. You can be investing your time as an engineer. You can be investing your time at wherever you are for the kingdom of God. That doesn't mean you have to go around and constantly be telling people who Jesus is, but you can be teaching people about who Jesus is by the way that you love them, by the way that you give yourselves up for them. Now, this also means, though, what does it look like for us to invest our talents here as a church on Sunday mornings? You know, quite simply, it's just, you know, are you plugged in somewhere? Are you volunteering somewhere? Because God has given you gifts to invest those things in other people so that the kingdom could be advanced. I think a perfect example of this is our greenhouse ministry. Greenhouse is where a lot of your kids are right now. Greenhouse and Clubhouse, that's the kids ministry down there. You know, we have, you heard me talk about this during Ripple Effects. We have a third of our building that we're getting ready to move into in January. I'll tell you right now that if we moved into that room, moved into that space right now, the preschool rooms, we would not be able to use all of them. Not because we don't have the kids, but because we don't have the people, the adults, the leaders to fill those rooms. Like we're busting at the seams out of those three rooms that are back there right now, but we literally need, we don't have the people to fill those other rooms. So the question is, how are we serving? How are we giving back? How are we investing our talents in the way that we can serve? Same thing in Clubhouse. We would always use more leaders who would want to pour into kids, middle school, high school, greeters, making coffee, all of those different things. And the big question you have to ask yourselves is here, how are we investing our time? I mean, you think about Greenhouse again, it's the young kids. Quite often we say, oh, I'm babysitting today, right? No, you're not babysitting, you're investing. You're investing in those kids because you're planting the seeds of faith that will one day grow, that you're helping kids feel welcomed and comfortable here so that they feel welcomed and comfortable here as they grow up so they can hear the gospel. Or you're investing your time back there because maybe it's a parent who just wants to come in here and needs to hear about Jesus for the first time ever. And this may be some of your stories, and now there's someone who'll be able to watch your kids for you. You are investing your time, your talents, whenever you do these things. So what does it look like for us to not only think about how do we invest our time, but how do we invest our talents in the things that God has given us? And lastly, we're not going to spend too much time on this because we just did a financial update a little bit ago, but our treasure. How do we invest our treasure? You know, this is probably the one that makes the most sense when you're thinking about spending and investing because it's a financial term and this is kind of a financial thing, but how are you investing the money that you have? You know, yes, we have to pay bills and yes, we have to do those things. But when it comes to, you know, you hearing words like, hey, Jennersville makes up 27% of the attendance, but 20% of the giving, or Ripple Effects, we still need another 300,000 to kind of make Jennersville like to have us be all in. Some of us, we get upset and we hear that and we just kind of want to like puff up and just get defensive or just feel like guilty about that. No, you don't feel guilty about that. The beautiful thing is that we have an opportunity to now invest our treasure, to be sacrificial. And let's be honest, in some ways, this might be where we feel it the most because as we said earlier, money grips our hearts. But what does it look like for us to be sacrificially giving in a way that we're investing into something that helps bear fruit that lasts so more people can hear the gospel, so we can make more space for our friends, for our neighbors? But what does it look like for us to not only just think about how do we spend, but how do we invest? And so there you go, time, talent, treasure. Spending versus investing. And this is the last thing I'll say this morning about this. I'll say other things, but it's the last thing I'll say about this. All those things, time, talent, treasure, as we talk about you being sacrificially giving of those things and sacrificing out of a root of love, none of those are yours anyhow. Do you know that? None of those are yours. They're all a gift. They're all a gift from Jesus, the person who created you, the lover of your soul. They're all a gift. Your time is not really yours. We think it's ours, don't we? Your time belongs to Christ. He knows your hours. He knows your days. Your talents, the things that he has given you, he is the one who has given you those things. How do we give those back to him? Your treasure, I know that we think we earned it. It's a gift from him. Every good thing comes from above. And so really, when we think about this, when we think about sacrificially giving of our time, of our talents, of our treasures, we're really just giving it back to him. We're giving it back to the one who modeled for us the ultimate sacrifice. The one who loved us so much, the one who remained in his father's love and came to us and kept his father's commands and kept his father's will so much so that it took him to the cross, that he died on the cross for our sins and rose again from the dead. So that if we believe in him, if we believe that, if we profess with our mouths that Jesus is Lord and believe in our hearts that God raised him from the dead, that we will be saved. You see, we don't ask you to sacrifice just because we want you to give stuff to us. We ask you to sacrifice because we have a Savior who gave up everything for all of us, for the entire world. And so we want to invite you this morning to be sacrificially giving, to give of your time, to give of your talent, to give of your treasure. But do it all as you abide, as you make yourself at home in his love and keep his commands and lean into what that means and what it looks like for us to grow together as a church and impact the world around us. Amen. Will you pray with me? Father, we are so grateful for you. Lord, we are grateful that you have given us an opportunity, Lord, to partner with you, that you have shown us your love, that you have said, abide, remain, that you have commanded us to be loved. How amazing is that? You say, I command you to experience my love. But Jesus, as we are hard-hearted people, we do not always lean into that. Father, would we be able to accept your love today? Father, would we just know who we are in your eyes? And God, out of that love that we have experienced, would we keep your commands? Would we sacrifice for one another? Would we sacrifice for the world around us, God? But we do this because of you, because of the love you have given us. Lord, help break those things. Help break those chains that are wrapped around our hearts that are holding us back from truly giving everything over to you, because Jesus, you are the one who modeled and sacrificed for us. You gave it all so that we might become your children. Jesus, we love you. We pray these things in your name. And together we all said, amen. Would you stand and sing one last song with us this morning?